You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Hey, hey, we're back with another deep cut from our archives. It's a movie we covered way back in May of 2016. It was commissioned by Dr. DeVito, and it's currently celebrating its 20th anniversary of being weird and fucked up.
Ah, you must be referring to Donnie Darko.
That's right. Before Jake Gyllenhaal herded sheep that one summer up on Brokeback.
Before he almost flash froze in Day After Tomorrow.
Before you heard Hugh Jackman's faint whistle in Prisoners.
And way before he baffled Spider-Man with his illusions as Mysterio.
He played a troubled teenager haunted by a spooky rabbit named Frank. And that teenager's name, Donnie Darko.
This is an extremely interesting film that spawned an extremely interesting conversation by the nature of time travel, wormholes, destiny. It's got a morbid, disturbing tone and atmosphere.
And we're still not sure if all the pieces for understanding this film are present in the actual film itself, so you might have to explore some DVD inserts or do some deep diving on message boards to fully get it.
Regardless, the film has been expanding minds and creeping people out for 20 years now. It's been a long time since we talked about it, so here it is again if you missed it the first time.
Or, you know, if you're looking for something unsettling to experience again this close to Halloween, either way, we hope you enjoy this re-release of a modern-day cult classic.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
On May 10th, Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes is coming to IMAX and theaters everywhere.
What a wonderful day!
This summer, one movie event will reign.
It is our time.
Apes hunt humans.
That is wrong.
Bend for your king.
Never.
Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Only in theaters May 10th. Tickets on sale now. Rated PG-13. Some material may be inappropriate for children under 13.
And I find it kind of funny, I find it kind of sad. The dreams in which I'm dying are the best I've ever had. I find it hard to tell you, I find it hard to take. When people run in circles, it's a very, very
everybody, welcome to another commission podcast for Bald Move. This time we are talking about the 2001 sci-fi fantasy, I'm going to call it, Donnie Darko. It's commissioned by Dr. Brandon DeVito, who I always want to call Danny DeVito. It's just, it's habit.
Brandy.
What can I do?
Brandy DeVito.
Dr. Brandy DeVito commissioned this one. He kind of gave us a big list of movies and said, pick one. And then I think he came back later and said, you know what? The community kind of wants Donnie Darko. I want Donnie
Darko.
Well,
I just laid it out to him, like, you know, because we've got two types of casts. We've got the, like, jokey, reminiscing, you know, who knows where it'll go, but it's probably going to be funny and shallow nostalgia reviews. And we've got, like, the fucking pseudo-philosophical mind blow, like, oh, man, wouldn't it be cool if...
Right.
Stoner-type podcasts. And I said... If you pick, like, what was it, RoboCop or
Space, Starship Troopers,
Troopers, you're probably going to get the nostalgia cast. If you go Donnie Darko, I hadn't seen it. You'd seen it once a long time ago. And I said, just talking from Jim, it seems like it's going to be one of those other podcasts. And apparently he prefers the, you know, as an adventurer, philosopher and dentist himself, he prefers the. He prefers the weird ones.
Those dentists known for their philosophy.
Yeah. They're always the, like, whatever the I'm wrong what I'm saying. Like, you know, you got a branch of whatever military, and there's always like, you know, the snipers that are like the weirdos that nobody, I think that's the dentist in the medical world.
Yeah. They're warrior poets.
Yeah. There you go. That's what I was trying to get at. They're like the, yeah, like warlocks of the order. So yeah, we, and this is a fucking weird film. I was not prepared for,
in you fact, can't we, really be prepared for it.
And these notes that I made look like the scrawlings of a madman, but so we actually punted. We were supposed to do this last week and I saw this. I'm like, there's no fucking way I can talk about this movie in like 48 hours.
I need to watch it again. I need to research.
All these books that are referenced in the film, and a lot of them are short stories or a little pamphlet things. So I was like, okay, we need to let's reset. So we did the Goonies, which was one of the former, the nostalgia casts.
And pretty easy to do the Goonies.
Pretty easy to do. I could have probably done that with not seeing it. I ended up watching it twice and got my son roped into it. But we're talking about Donnie Darko, man. This was directed and written by Richard Kelly, who, he was like 26, 27 when he did this thing. He's only 40. He's my age. He's like 41 right now.
I think he's the guy that plays Harry Stamper, right?
Sure. He also directed a movie called Southland Tales, which you said is yet another
Stamper. I don't know why I said Harry.
Harry Stamper?
Doug Stamper from House of Cards.
It's Danny Stamper and Douglas DeVito. And he also wrote another one called The Box, which, so I did some research and I went to a lot of forum threads, and there are some Richard Kelly fans because he hasn't done a lot since. Mm-hmm. And some people say that like they really like Southland Tales because it's another kind of bizarro Donnie Darko, and it seems like people don't know what to make of The Box. Okay. So I kind of want to see both of these now, but what do you think of this Donnie Darko movie?
So I was in that same box with everybody else going, what the fuck did I just watch when I first saw it? I was probably, I don't know, early 20s at the time that I saw it, because it was just out on DVD and I picked it up and it blew my mind. I didn't know what to make of it. Mm-hmm. I knew obviously that it was either some kind of time travel or delusional story. I honestly thought it had more to do with some kind of psychosis, given like how much he was being medicated and like these weird visions with Frank, the bunny.
Yeah, it's funny because I put in my notes like in the first 10 minutes, like I'm seeing the debate between, is this real or is this all in his head coming a mile away?
Right.
Although I don't feel that way now. I feel
once you dig in a little bit, people have dug all the way in on this movie. And after watching it a second time, I still felt definitely confused. But we watched the director's cut, which actually explains quite a bit more. It has passages from the philosophy of time travel.
I wish I could. So I thought this movie was great. I wish I could have seen the theatrical cut first to have even more like a what the fuck.
That's what I saw the first time.
Because I feel like if you watch the directors, there's a couple movies that like you can debate endlessly. I feel like this movie is more along the lines of Inception, where I think there is a answer here.
Yes.
And it's fairly cogently laid out, even though it seems like holy shit. And there's a lot of stuff that just is like, you got to accept that this is kind of weird science.
Yes.
But it's internally consistent, it seems.
Yeah.
Like Inception. So I feel like I went in watching Inception first time, like, man, I probably going to watch this movie 10 times and still not be able to figure it out. But then by the third watch, I'm like, nope, I got this figured out. I feel the same way about Donnie Darko, but if I'd have started with the theatrical release, it seems like it'd be a lot harder. And conversely, I think the director's cut has everything you need to figure it out.
I think so. Yeah.
You'd have to watch it maybe four or five times to get it down, but I kind of feel cheated when I went online and did the research and someone has essentially done all that and said, this is exactly how the movie tracks. It's kind of like,
but imagine if you were one of those people doing that research alongside the movie, right? Like,
yeah.
Piecing it all together, figuring it out.
It reminded me much more of Memento, where that's a movie that's a little bit harder to figure out, and there's a little bit maybe more room for debate, but it's very rewarding. And I was kind of on the ground floor of that, where this, it's like I got all this stuff renovated. So it's like, oh man, this would have been fun to puzzle out on my own, but...
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that's the thing. If you haven't seen this movie and you're just listening to the podcast, I would suggest going and watching it at least once before you get the full explanation, because we're going to give it here.
Yeah.
I mean, we're going to lay it all out for you, and all the mysteries will be resolved here.
And this is yet another one that you really should watch without any prep going into it. And it's, the other thing is, like, this isn't like, It's one of those niche movies like Memento where it's a good chance if you missed it back in its day, you probably maybe never heard of it or gotten around to it. I thought this was a horror film.
Oh, really?
That's one of the reasons I never got around to seeing it, because I don't, that's not my favorite genre, but it looks like it's a horror film, and it's called Donnie Darko.
It definitely does, yeah.
So,
which might be why I glommed onto it.
Right.
And you were like, oh, I wanted to see this.
Yeah.
And then my mind was blown and it became somewhat of a cult classic for me. I know for other people it is way more so.
Yeah. And that's the thing. Like, I don't know about people who, like, are there people that, like, we talk about Fight Club where they base their life philosophies on this film? Because it's, surely not. It's, this film's got nothing to really base your life principles on.
I don't know. I mean, like,
what philosophy is contained in here?
There's a lot about, like, fear and futility and choice and
dying,
like,
alone.
Just tons of, like, philosophical ideas.
There's exploration of themes, but nothing. Like, there's no, like,
right.
Yeah, like, what tool do you take out of this to put in your life toolbox? Like, it's, if you've, that's the thing. Like, I feel like the younger you are and the less you've seen cinema and television, this is just like, I can't even imagine being a 20 something and seeing this and like, oh, if this is like the first heavy film you've seen.
Yeah, it was pretty close to that for me. It wasn't exactly life changing, but it was, I felt like I identified with this movie in a way, especially Donnie Darko, because of like the way he kind of saw through all the bullshit.
Yeah.
And I was just like, yeah, man, you're right. Now I don't come down, I guess, in the same place that Donnie Darko does. On that whole thing.
I can see, like, if you're in your mid-20s, you're just like, you know, you'd just gotten out of the religion experience, and I bet you did feel like the only sane man in a room full of crazy people.
Sometimes.
Many times.
Sure.
It had to have.
Yeah.
Like, I can't even imagine.
Like, I'm going to pass around this wine, and it's supposed to be representative of what?
But even just sitting in a room having conversations with people, it's like, holy, that still blows my mind about your covert atheism.
So Donnie Darko hit me in a certain spot that I'm sure it hits a lot of young people, you know?
Yeah.
When they're just trying to figure out the world, figure out life and how to live it.
Yeah.
And that's one of the themes that I feel is pretty strong in this movie. But let's talk about the plot a little bit, yeah?
Okay. You want to go there first?
I don't know. I figured we should get that out of the way because it's the most straightforward part of the movie, honestly.
Yeah, it is. Okay.
On some level. So there's this website, donniedarko.org.uk, that you can go to, which basically lays the whole thing out. They've got it all sorted out. They've got the philosophy of time travel up there, chapter by chapter, verbatim. And then they kind of go over it in a Cliff Notes sort of way and say, here's what all this means, right? Like, each chapter they take, the manipulated dead or the manipulated living or living receiver, they take all those things and they break them down.
The artifact.
Yeah. So where do you want to start? Start with maybe the universes?
So I think you start in the beginning, which is this film opens with Donnie Darko being awoken at night by a vision of an evil rabbit.
Yep.
And he's spared minutes before a jet engine comes out of nowhere and crushes his bed, and which should have killed him.
He's pulled out of bed by the rabbit telling him, like, making him sleepwalk.
Yes. And we learn that, you know, you think this is going to be like, well, this is going to be a Breaking Bad situation. There's an airliner down somewhere, but no, there is no recorded loss of any airplane. This jet engine just flew out of nowhere, and then Donnie Darko is told by these evil rabbit visions that he has 28 days before the world ends.
Yeah.
And what we come to appreciate is that this event has spawned a pocket universe apart from a real universe where Donnie Darko should have died.
Yeah.
And he has 28 days to get this jet engine back to the point of the time rupture, or our real universe will be destroyed.
Mm-hmm.
And life manipulates a bunch of events to steer. I mean, it's a long chain of causality that gets him into the place where he is both ready, has the materials needed, and has the I guess life attitude, because he almost has
willing to make the choice. Yeah.
He's a Christ figure in that he has to die so that literally everyone in the universe can live. That's debatable.
That's debatable. Super debatable. And I kind of want to debate it at the end. But yeah, that's the basic premise, is the tangent universe is created and he is trying to put it back because it's very unstable, apparently. Like this artifact that comes through the jet engine.
Uh-huh.
Apparently it's a duplicate. And there's some very weird stuff that's happening. Like, there's a guy in a red coat with a flashlight, and you're like, what the fuck is he doing here? There's no context. But
yeah,
I guess it turns out that guy's from the FAA, and that they are investigating this jet engine because it's an exact duplicate of a flight that landed safely.
Yes.
So, like, this artifact from the primary universe is coming to the tangent universe, and they're like, why are there two of this exact same thing here?
Yeah.
And they're trying to figure it out.
Yeah.
I don't know where to go.
So at one point, so in the middle of the film, Donnie is given this book by his teacher, Noah Wiley, is The Philosophy of Time Travel, which is written by this Regina character a long time ago, who was a nun. And she outlines that fact that, you know, occasionally time gets ripped and you have these transient universes. What did you call it? Tangent universe.
Yep.
And that the key to time travel is water and metal. Right. And that the herald of a fact that you're in a tangent universe is the presence of artifact. And she lists a Native American brave who was standing by a cliff and was pierced through the heart by an arrow when there was no army in sight. A medieval knight that gets a sword thrust through his chest. Again, with no battle nearby, and that when that happens, there's a random selection of a living receiver that it's his job to get this artifact back to the rift in time, and that these rifts last for a matter of weeks.
And then that living receiver may or may not be randomly chosen based on proximity to the rift.
There's no concrete information, and that there's two classes, a manipulated living and a manipulated dead. The manipulated dead die in this tangent universe.
Yeah, anyone who dies in a tangent universe becomes manipulated dead.
And they're able to communicate to the living mad bonkers stuff.
So does fucking Jesus resurrecting himself. Sure. You have to view this
as a
philosophy of time travel as the Bible, right? Like, let's say the Bible were about time travel.
Yeah.
And it's true.
And so Regina's Moses. And so that's the thing, I guess, as an atheist, I kept rebelling against, because it's like a relatively hard sci-fi concept, but they're wanting me to just take a lot of this stuff on the basis of faith. And comes down to suspension of disbelief. And in my case, but if you can't get past that, there's no there, because this is just a 5-year-old making up a story. You know,
and now
I got four shields.
Well,
why do you have four shields? Because I need them.
Yeah.
I'm being, you know.
But what you see on the screen in this movie does tell you that this is real. So, like, in this universe, I'm going with it, you know?
Well, or he's a schizophrenic and it's happening all in his head.
I think that's
harder to justify. Let's save that debate. Save that debate.
Sure.
Because I think so, too, but I guess I'll take the con side. Okay. These manipulated dead have the ability to appear to him in visions and nightmares and dreams to influence him. And the manipulated living unconsciously do and set up events to cause this insurance trap, which is the universe's way to ensure that the living receiver makes it back so it doesn't get destroyed. It kind of stacks the deck in its favor. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, the living receiver is granted superpowers.
Yeah.
Has super strength, the ability to manifest fire and water and telekinesis. And at first I'm like, what the fuck? But the second time I watched the movie, he clearly manifests every one of those powers.
Right.
In the causality loop that is part of the ensurement trap that he gets back to the place where he can put the artifact back.
Yeah.
So, for example, the reason he is willing to, I guess, sacrifice himself is because he falls in love with this girl.
Mm-hmm.
But he uses his power of water to flood the school, so school's closed. The next day, he meets the girl at the bus stop and has a conversation where they begin dating.
Yeah.
What was the other thing? He does the axe and
burns down Cunningham's house.
But wait,
house.
Before that, he puts the axe in the bulldog, which makes the lady at school go crazy because
he uses super strength to do that.
He uses super strength to embed this into a solid bronze bulldog.
Uh-huh.
And these acts of vandalism combined make the phys ed teacher, who's this kind of like Scientology,
this health teacher.
Yeah, I think it's the gym teacher, but they also, because in my school, gym teacher also is the health teacher.
That was also, that was true in my school. Gilberti was the guy.
Oh, yeah, I know Gilberti. You probably got along with Gilberti, didn't you?
Yeah. Gilberti. He told us a story about being on a date and eating mozzarella sticks.
That Italian bond.
Right.
That Sicilian, you know, omerta.
Yeah. I was more concerned with the girls sitting next to me in health class than actually learning anything, though.
Man, Gilberti wore the tightest fucking shirts.
He did. Yeah.
And man,
well, he was ripped. I mean, he was jacked.
That's
why not?
The thing. But like, did you ever think that like he turned it up when there? And I never thought of it at the time, but it feels like he turned it up around the teenage girls.
You think so?
Yeah, I felt like he was kind of, you know, extra.
Flexing.
He was like, yeah, he was.
He'd sit in his health chair and flex all period.
Yeah, like some dudes are up there talking to him. He's like, you know, whatever. And then some girl, he's just flexing.
Why? He's teaching high school, man.
I'm just saying.
Maybe Gilberti had a. I don't want to,
because I never heard any hint of impropriety.
Maybe Gilberti was a Cunningham. Maybe he was, had some vices going on.
Yeah, could be. Could be. But I don't think so. I don't want to slander the man. He just liked to look. He's flexing. He had to flex around the opposite sex. That was his code. Anyway, flex around the opposite sex.
That's
the tool you can put in your life toolbox. Jesus. But yeah, no, she goes crazy and brings in the Scientologist, who Donnie Darko rails against, burns down his house, which leads the police to investigate and find child pornography. Which leads that health teacher to have to spend all of her money on a legal defense fund because she's in a fucking cult, which makes her unable to take Sparkle Motion, the cheerleading dance squad, to the finals, which makes Donnie Darko's mother have to get on the plane that's the going over the time rip so Donnie can
pull the engine off it.
Meanwhile, his girlfriend gets killed by the other manipulated dead, the bunny face guy, Frank, which causes him to kill him and then be comfortable with the fact that he could die alone so that he can make the sacrifice. That is fucking crazy.
Yeah, no, it's a very loopy type movie. You like the manipulated dead are particularly in that camp because they're killed later in the movie and they go back to the beginning of the movie.
Yes.
Where we first see them and meet them.
Yes.
And manipulate everything from there.
Except for, I know that Gretchen is a manipulated dead.
I don't know how she manipulates him.
That's the thing. Yeah. But there's also something about overt and subvert or subversive control. Mm-hmm. Like that the Frank was the one that was the directly manipulative and the other one is more of like, so there's one that's directly manipulating and there's one that's providing the motivation. Okay. So it could be that Gretchen just didn't need to do anything.
Yeah. She just needed to look like.
Or also the other way I interpreted it is that Gretchen, maybe she was appearing in dreams or his psyche somehow that we didn't directly notice. But we noticed that Donnie Darko is obsessed with sex. Which feels like something. I mean, I know I was a teenage boy.
Right.
I had inappropriate boners 24/7, mastered the waistband tuck.
Masturbated in front of your therapist.
Yeah. I mean,
made her super uncomfortable.
It's so hot. How can you resist? But I wonder if Gretchen wasn't somehow making him so girl crazy that it would make him even more susceptible to falling in love with her.
Yeah, I forget exactly how, like, their interactions. I was so focused on so much of the other plot in this movie.
Right.
That I didn't, like, look at the intricacies of how they interact.
No, that's the thing. And that's the only reason I'm thinking of this is because that was one of the major questions. Like, if Gretchen is manipulated dead, and I know she is, then how did she actually manipulate him?
Also, do Frank and Gretchen know of each other? Because maybe her role in it is to get Frank killed. So that he can be the bunny that goes back and gets Donnie Darko to do what he needs
to do. But she was alive when, if she so maybe she was appearing to Frank the whole time when he was still alive?
No, I don't even mean appearing to Frank, but
I feel
her death that causes Frank to die, right?
Sure.
So maybe it was her job to maneuver Donnie Darko into a place where she dies. Where she's fallen for, or he's fallen for her, and she dies.
But if the manipulated dead had the ability to appear to him in dreams and visions, she never exercised that ability.
No, she didn't. But so, Frank does, obviously.
Yeah, yeah.
So
it's just weird that I guess it seems like that's something that just so to make the plot a little bit more obscure. Because if they're both doing it, then I feel like it's like QED when you get to the end of the movie. Although I don't know how anyone figures this out the first go.
Right. I don't know that you can.
It's designed
especially theatrical cut. It's
yeah, but so I like it, unlike that, you know, this is the type of movie I like versus the Usual Suspects that I don't, in that when I watched the second time through, like, everything seemed like it fit. It wasn't like some bullshit revelation at the end where it's like, oh, yeah. No, but it's like all this stuff is working. Now, there's a couple other questions I don't know. This Regina character, the what they call her, crazy hair, devil hair lady?
Death hair? Grandma Death.
Grandma Death.
Yeah.
That's what it was. Was she a living transceiver? So how does she know?
I think she's Donnie
Darko. Information.
So there's a lot of speculation.
How does she know this information?
I think now is a good time to talk about whether or not the living receiver has to die.
Okay.
In order to reconverge these tangent universes.
Before we begin, let's make sure we're working from the same assumptions.
Okay.
Based on living or reading the philosophy of time travel, do you agree that the historical examples that she gives, the living transceivers died?
Yes.
I do too. And we know Donnie Darko died.
Yeah.
Which means of all the living transceivers we know of, 3 for 3 has died.
Right. Now, I'm going to speculate that she is also a living receiver.
That's what I think, too.
From the past. And her ability to write this book, Philosophy of Time Travel, as Roberta Sparrow instead of Grandma Death, is caused by that. Like, she only can write that book because she's experienced it.
But you are assuming that based on information not presented in the film, right?
Well, I'm also assuming it because Donnie Darko doesn't have to die here.
It does seem like he could have gotten out of bed.
Yeah.
And he had the knowledge.
Yeah.
But he was so moved by the cosmic absurdity at the moment and the fact that he had made peace that he didn't feel the need to.
And I think it's also I think Donnie Darko is someone who's very... having a very hard time dealing with the realities of existence.
Sure.
The realities of being a human in this universe.
Right.
And I think in the end, he makes the choice to die because he doesn't want to, he can't deal with it.
Which I thought was so, that was so chilling about the Mad World song, which I previously had been the Gears of War, Gears of War trailer song.
But previously, right.
But now that I've seen this, it's going to be forever overwritten because the lyric...
You can't help it.
The lyric that the dreams I have of dying are the best I've ever had.
Uh-huh.
Like, I got the distinct feeling that Donnie's last 4 weeks where he had these superpowers, he felt in control of his life, he fell in love with this girl, was the first time in a long time that he felt like he belonged and made sense, and everything made sense.
He had a purpose, right?
And if he
was going to save the universe.
And if he bails out and lives, then he goes back to normal,
yeah.
And none of this stuff is going to happen to him again. So it's like, that's the, it's funny and it's sad, and that's exactly the reaction he had at the end. So it could be that this religious experience you undergo as a living receiver makes it so that you are, if not, I don't know if you'd call it suicidal, but it's like, there's nothing I can, something moves you to allow your death to happen. And I don't know why Regina Sparrow is different.
Well, with Roberta Sparrow, I feel like she had the same experience and she came away from it as a survivor of it. And that's what kind of drove her mad, is like that sense of, I had my one moment of purpose, and now the rest of it is so futile, so absurd and ridiculous, and like, look at all the horrible shit that's going on around me, and I'm powerless to stop any of it.
Why didn't she allow herself to die?
I don't know. I mean, that's not explored in the movie. I mean, this is all headcanon.
Yeah, these are things that you cannot determine from the movie. That's why I wanted to explore why you thought it, because I distinctly thought the same thing, but I almost suspect it's just because my brain wants there to be a reason for this to have happened.
So I think the two things that stand out to me as clues to Roberta Sparrow's origins are, she wrote this book. So she either had this information passed to her, or she has firsthand knowledge. I choose to go with firsthand knowledge that drove her mad. And also, like I said before, Donnie Darko choosing not to die, or could have chosen not to die, which to me says that someone else who's a living receiver in the past may have, in fact, chosen not to die. So why wouldn't that be Roberta Sparrow, who wrote the book? Like, it's not super solid. I don't think it's conclusive. But
if she had that experience, though, I think she would put that in the living trance. She would have put, like, she would have given an example of
well,
some.
The foreword is
she,
like
or
that.
Or she could say something like, well, you could have a choice to live or die, and that choice is yours and it doesn't impact the universe. That would have been useful information to have if you're Donnie Darko.
Yeah, the thing is, I think so.
This book did not help Donnie Darko do anything, I don't think.
Well, here's the thing.
The universe would have manipulated
really?
Him regardless. Yeah.
I think it helped him figure out that he was supposed to be doing something in the first place.
But I think
he
would
any
have
kind of goal.
Those things. Frank was making sure that those events were going to happen regardless of him being aware of what was happening or not.
I don't know. I think the stuff he's seeing with like the abyss effects, the James Cameron coming out of your chest, the God's path sort of thing. I think
that's the
all
other thing.
That's a consequence of him reading this book and figuring this out.
That was the only thing that was not an organic chain when Frank led him to the gun, which he needed to kill Frank. That was everything else was a single causality loop, but that was a second causality loop. What about the abyss effect do you think suggests?
I think that's reflective of him starting to understand, like it's symbolic of him starting to understand this universe that he's in. This
chain
universe.
Of cars. Yeah. This people's lines of fate or whatever they are. Yeah.
Right. Well, more so than that. Like,
but I don't think he needed the book for that.
I think he does for him to understand it himself.
Well, then what did the Native American and what did the medieval knight do? Like, did they have a similar book?
I don't know.
Is Roberta?
It's possible that their tangent universe. Well, no, they do have artifacts in their
right.
tangent universe.
So is Roberta? Is she part of the manipulated living in that this causality loop caused her to write this book for? Like, I'm almost wondering one part of the piece that the book doesn't contain is that the universe or God or whatever is looking out for everyone, because it seems like there is some kind of supernatural force that is. Or maybe it's a universal constant that makes time kind of heal itself. But do you think that that's part of it, too?
Right.
That there's always there's a living narrator that's job is to have an inspiration to write this stuff down? Because she puts in a foreword that the reason I maybe don't think she's gone through this is because she says this is something that's essentially like inspired. And I hope to God it remains fiction. But if it ever becomes real, I'm writing it down. So
she
like,
doesn't
why
say
would
she remains fiction? She is, I can read you the foreword.
Okay,
here.
Yeah, you got it up. Tell me
so
what it says.
It says this intent of this short book is for it to be used as a simple and direct guide in a time of great danger. I pray that it is merely a work of fiction. If it is not, then I pray for you, the reader of this book. If I'm still alive when the events foretold in these pages occur, then I hope that you will find me before it is too late. So
yeah, you're right. That's pretty ambiguous.
It is. It's fairly ambiguous. You know, my choice here, and whether or not I even have that choice is up for debate, but the way I'm interpreting it is that she has been through this, and this idea that you will find me before it's too late, she clearly wrote this book at, you know, right after she discovered it. However she discovered this tangent universe.
Yeah,
this
a revelation or whether it was something that she experienced herself.
Right. She clearly wrote it before she went mute and insane, like and she's assuming that she will be herself for the years to come, right? And that they can find her and that she will be able to tell them what's happening.
Well, that's the other thing is like I feel like I discount some of these warnings because Donnie Darko never did confide in her, so
right.
nothing. Well, she did
but
whisper
through this book. I mean, that's
she did say everyone dies alone to him, which might have contributed to the mental state he needed to be in to make the supreme sacrifice.
When does she die? Does she die in the tangent universe? Is she one of the living or one of the manipulated dead, or does she die after that?
Wait,
I think she dies after.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's this.
Well, does she die in the Mad World montage? So that's after the universe
is
healed.
I think she does. I think that's when it happens. So I'm not sure. That's just the headcanon I'm operating under. I don't know that this is left vague on purpose, right? So many of these things, like there's clearly a mythology here, but it's not super fleshed out.
Okay. Well, that's what I'm saying. Like it doesn't. It's one of those things where it's kind of like the Big Bang is the point where it's like you can't really peer beyond that point. Your science, your ability to detect information is limited there. And I feel like this is the edge of the known universe. So this is the point of the Big Bang where there's not enough information within the books, which is outside the movie or the movie itself, to detail what, how Roberta got this information, whether she was a living receiver. It's something you can debate, but ultimately it doesn't affect the meaning of the movie. It's just the point at which you have to start speculating and choosing what to believe rather than the movie actually telling you what to believe.
Sure. Yeah.
That's the same way that was whether Donnie had to die or not. If all the living historical living manipulators had died, then that would say that he had to. But if you believe that Roberta is a living transceiver that survived, then obviously not. And I just don't, I don't feel like there's a way to resolve that debate. Unlike, you know,
sure,
we mentioned the Sixth Sense is solvable. I think Inception's solvable.
Right. And it's so far outside the realm of what we know as reality that there's no contextual clues you can really use outside of the film to say this is what would have happened or this is how it goes down. So I mean everybody's free to come up with their own interpretation, I guess, of the end of this movie.
Yeah. What do you think? So why did Noah Wiley, after giving him the book and being game to talk about this time travel stuff, and he's part of the manipulated living, so everything he's doing is subconsciously moving Donnie Darko to his end goal, why did he then nervously break off contact at the end of the movie?
Clearly that was his destiny, right? That was the thing he had to do to get Donnie
but
further
down
the path.
How did that work in that favor? Because it seems like what Donnie needed is for him to continue to play. Like, well, if you're, you know, like...
Clearly not, because it works, right?
Yeah. Like, right, so I'm saying
maybe
like,
if he had been there to talk it through with him, something doesn't go right later on.
Yeah, and I feel like the Destructor, them reading the Destructors was vital.
I read that book. That
I did
short
too.
Story.
Yeah, because it's only 17 pages.
It's pretty good.
And it's free. I don't know whether it's in the public domain or what, but it's widely available places for free.
And I largely agree with the analysis that Donnie Darko gave.
That's the thing. I was kind of disappointed because the movie essentially contains what I would call the Cliff Notes version, like what you need to tell your English teacher to pass the Destructor's test.
Right. The girl got it completely wrong. She clearly didn't read it.
Sure. Well, that's
Donnie. Yeah. Donnie just says it's destruction as a form of creation.
Right.
Know?
Right. Which
is right.
Ties into what he's doing, that he's essentially, by saving the universe, he's arguably that's an act of creation. Mm-hmm. The negation of destruction is an act of creation,
right,
by the transitive property. But the other thing the English teacher said that was significant but I don't understand is when she said cellar door, or was that Gretchen?
It might have been Gretchen.
Fuck.
That was something that Gretchen did that led him.
But he said cellar, it's the most beautiful word.
Oh, no, that was her.
In the English language.
That was the English teacher, yeah. That was Drew Barrymore.
What the fuck does that mean?
I have no idea. No idea. Is it an anagram?
But that's the thing. Like, I feel like there are still mysteries to uncover in this film.
Right.
So, but I don't know if I'm the guy to do it. I'm just saying that, like, and also,
the
director himself has said a bunch of things where he's implied that, like, he didn't really even have all this stuff tracked out, which I don't believe. Like, I don't believe you can sit down and write this movie and not be an actual intention. Now, you could say that shit because your intention is for people to figure out it themselves.
Sure.
But I don't believe he honestly just made a movie about a creepy time travel and, you know, I don't know.
Yeah. I was surprised, speaking of Noah Wiley and Drew Barrymore, how many famous people are in this? Like,
right. Patrick Swayze is a child molester.
Seth Rogen is a douchebag high school asshole. Like, It surprised me to see all these famous faces.
Probably fresh off of Freaks and Geeks.
Pretty close to it.
Probably,
yeah.
You know, pretty close to that time.
Yeah.
That's the thing. Like, this version of America, I don't think exists anywhere. It takes like the worst part. And a lot of movies do, like American Beauty. It takes like the worst, most banal parts of suburban life and throws them all together. Like, you've got the family who seems like it's a well-meaning nuclear family that everyone is just dysfunctional. You've got kids doing cocaine in high school.
Right.
Like, that says something about the socioeconomic status of this. And they're going to a place that requires uniforms. It's like all these people are well off.
Yeah.
How do you afford to do coke in high school?
I know some people who did coke in high school.
Really?
Yeah.
Like, I didn't, in my high school, lots of weed.
Not in my
imagine.
High school, but people I met afterward who have told me stories.
How did they get the money for coke? That seems like an expensive.
You get a job when you're in high school, maybe like an after school. I don't know.
And you're just dropping $80 on an eight ball every weekend.
Yeah, not every weekend. I don't think they were like.
But I'm saying these people were snorting coke in school.
It wasn't Studio 54 here. Like it was just like a once in a while thing.
Uh huh. Okay. Who are the other famous people? George Bush, Michael Dukakis.
Well, yeah.
This movie is. I assumed that this was President Roslin was there,
whose name I don't remember.
Yeah, I assumed also that this movie was set in contemporary to its times in the 90s. It's actually set in the 80s.
Right.
It's
right.
A period piece.
Maggie Gyllenhaal also in this.
And the Gyllenhaal they gave twins. You both Gyllenhaal barrels, man. They played the real life siblings, which I thought was cute.
Yeah, and Jenny Malone, I've seen her in a lot of stuff as Gretchen.
Sure.
She's good. I like her. Would you be shocked if I told you there was a sequel to this movie?
Yeah, I know. S. Darko.
Right.
It's universally reviled.
So I hear. I've never seen it. It's the story of Samantha, the youngest sister, mm-hmm. who is slightly grown up now. And
she was a Sparkle Motion.
Yes, the Sparkle Motion sister.
Sessie was very happy I finally saw this film because one of her favorite reactions is, or one of her favorite things to say is, I'm starting to doubt your commitment to Sparkle Motion. Anytime. For various, and that's, she's always like, oh, Frock, I forgot you haven't seen Donnie Darko. But now I've seen it, so I get those jokes.
Now you get it.
Also, she likes to say, chut up every once in a while as a way to end the insult chain.
Okay. Now you get it. Now you can rip on it. So many inside jokes.
I know. Like, it's no longer the final straw on the chain.
Yep.
Final straw on the camel's back. What the? Dude, I'm turning into my mother.
Are you a
in a very
receiver?
Specific way, because I remember as a kid thinking, why is my mother not able to get, like, she would talk about the hunt for Red October and she would like say like it's the search for Blue November or whatever. It's like approximately right. Yeah. And she'd do that in names and places and the fucking food she'd order. And I'm like, what is this? It's happening to me.
You know why?
Why?
Because you have 40 years of stuff in your brain.
I don't think everyone does that. I feel like I'm uniquely susceptible to this word salad bullshit. And it's kind of frightening.
Brainworms. You have hookworms in your brain.
Mad cow. That's what Danny Crane always said in Boston Legal. Got mad cow. So I'll start telling people.
I got the mad cow.
Fuck off. I got mad cow.
Yep.
Talking to the man of the disability. Okay. What were we saying?
Let's talk a little bit about the family now that we're talking about the sister. Because like all their family is very distinctive, I feel. Like their dad is one of those guys who, you know, does his work, then comes home and kind of drinks and watches sports with his buddies. And
he's
kind of not oblivious. I mean, he sees what's going on. His dad seems cooler than his mom. His mom's very apathetic, very, I almost see like we're at some point going to have to get into the overarching themes of this movie, to talk about his mom, because she seems very over it and jaded but kind of sad that she's jaded, like self realizes
that
she's jaded.
Because the things that she's fed up with, I feel like I would be fed up with too.
Right, but she seems like she's given up, like she's powerless to even combat them in any kind of way. And it happens, like, especially after Donnie gets smashed by the jet engine, she's just out leaning on a tree smoking, like, yep, this is another thing in a series of bad things that have gone wrong in life, and
I don't know,
that's
I feel
just how
like
the world is.
I'm not willing to ascribe to her character traits that could easily be described, explained by trauma. Like, I feel like if that happened to me,
right,
where I've got a son who is schizophrenic and he's in therapy and he wandered off and something hit his bed and you're thinking like, well, I guess thank God he's crazy. But, you know, it's like, I feel like you'd get a 1,000-yard stare about something like that.
I think I would describe her as coping with reality in her own way.
Yeah.
And like, but that, and everyone in this movie is.
Yeah.
And I think, like, there's a generational thing here too, because I think one of the overarching themes is kind of the futility of life as a human being. You know, you're born, you're going to die. Nothing you do really matters in a cosmic existential sense.
Yeah.
And that's the thing that Donnie Darko is wrestling with the entire movie, like philosophically.
Yeah.
And the thing that kind of leads him down the path of discovering the philosophy of time travel and all that. I view the mom as kind of a post Darko person where she has kind of realized the futility of it all. And like,
she was a teenage Donnie Darko. Now she's grown
right,
up.
Right. And so she's like the older version of Donnie Darko, where she's just like, well, this is life and I'm just going to live out the rest of it.
Yeah.
And Donnie Darko is actively struggling with this idea. He's growing up. And I think this is a metaphor for, you know, puberty and growing up and like just the whole package there of humanity. And then his sister, his little sister, is an interesting generation here because she's throughout the movie portrayed as very like very innocent. You know, she's just carefree. She's running around, just having a good time. She's doing her dance thing in Sparkle Motion. That's all she cares about because she hasn't yet got to the point where she's cognizant.
She makes those realizations
of the existential absurdities of life.
Interesting.
Yeah.
They're all in different phases of the same continuum because I feel like
and
that
I
is.
I think there's stuff to back this up. Like the way Donnie Darko treats his little sister is, you know, he's there to kind of help her along sometimes, but he's also a complete shit to her in most respects.
That's brother and sister, sure.
Right. And you can see like this innocent little girl when she's at the bus stop is being the bully, right? She's she's calling the fat girl fat.
Yeah.
She's being a little shit. And I feel like she doesn't quite understand the consequences of her actions yet. Whereas Donnie Darko is starting to.
Well, the other thing is, I feel like Donnie Darko's depiction of an intelligent and socially mature teenager. And the curse of that is that you are just surrounded by fucking insane idiots.
Right.
Now, some of them will grow out of their insanity.
Sure.
Some of them will grow out of their ignorance and stupidity. Mm-hmm. But most of them don't grow out of all of it. And it's like one of those things where it's you just waiting. Like I feel like I'm such an asshole by saying this, but I identify that because I was, you know, above average maturity and intelligence. And that's what all the fucking adults told me all the time, which set a lot of pressure on a little set of shoulders. But I felt like that the whole time is like, Jesus Christ, I am in an insane asylum.
Okay.
Which probably also didn't help my social status because I'm inherently looking down upon these people. They
right.
And I wasn't emotionally
that.
Mature enough to conceal it or sure. have any other social, like I've developed a sense of humor as a way to ward this shit off because I can make wry, sarcastic observations, but it's, oh, he's so funny instead of this guy's a fucking cocksucker.
Sure.
So I feel like that there's when you come to this realization that you've, the universe is meaningless, right? Mm-hmm. There's two reactions you can take away from that. One is, well, then I get to define my own meaning, and it's kind of a liberating thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like it's just as intellectually valid to be like, well, literally nothing matters.
Yes.
I can sink into a depression and to a nihilism.
And that's where Donnie Darko goes.
And that's going to define my life. And like I said, it's like, I don't know when you're balancing on the edge of that philosophical knife, I don't know which side you fall, or why you fall on one side or another. Is it an inherent optimism or cynicism?
I don't know, like, but I feel like I looked at Donnie Darko as almost a tragedy of that sort of view, because like he does come down on the nihilistic sort of edge of that.
Right.
Whereas I come down on the, it's all bullshit, but you can enjoy the ride.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not like, you don't have any meaning in the moment, so have fun with it. I don't know. That's just where I come down. Maybe it is like an innate sort of optimism. Maybe maybe it's just, it's not nature, it's nurture. Maybe it's my environment I grew up in was one of an optimistic nature.
But see, that's
to the point where that has ingrained in me.
That gets me to the other thing that makes me feel haunted about this movie as a parent, because you know, I think that, and again, Jesus Christ, I sound like such a conceited asshole, but I feel like I'm an interesting person. Okay.
Okay.
And I would like to raise an interesting person.
I think most people feel the opposite. I certainly do.
You feel like you're not an interesting person?
I feel like I'm just a rando or nobody. Yeah.
Huh. I don't know.
I think most people feel that way.
Okay, well, see, now I feel like a real
asshole. Now you're an elitist asshole. I feel like
I got plenty of self-loathing and other don't you worry.
Yeah.
I got plenty, but it's and I feel like I have a premium on raising an interesting person, but I feel like there's another knife edge. That, like the difference between madness and genius.
Sure.
Like interesting versus eccentric versus weirdo.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like Donnie Darko is on that, and he's falling off onto the weirdo side of things.
Right.
But like the
he
thing
can't
he
deal
said,
with it. I don't think he can cope with the madness.
Right. But like he's also got these, like, I hope one day I'm called into school because my son has told off some fucking douchebag like a Patrick Swayze. Uh-huh. Like, and I love the parents' reaction where they're trying to take it serious because it's coming from a school official and they're talking about it in serious, but they're secretly kind of proud and amused that their son was able to let the air out of this blowhard.
Right.
But that's something I worry about. It's like, man, like the fine line between being an interesting person that's funny and people generally like, and the one that's kind of a isolated weirdo is so hard. And like, I don't know. And all teenagers are kind of weirdo, especially the interesting ones. So it's like, there's going to be a period of time where I'm like worried for my son that he's going to be too weird and he's going to be too not fitting into his peers. And I know how bad that sucks.
Well, here's what's really going to bake your noodle.
Yeah.
Do you even have any choice in how you raise or your son?
I mean, but you that's the thing. Is it nature versus nurture? Like, some of this stuff he gets genetically.
Right. And neither of these are choices, nature or nurture, right? You're just thrust into the situation you are.
Yeah, because the way I'm nurturing is by my nature, and I've tried to inform myself and go into this thinking, but I've realized, like, I remember when he was a baby, mm-hmm. I'm like, this is the generation of Hubbards that's going to have it all figured out.
Gonna
and
be
he's
going
to have all the possible advantages, and I'm going to do things right as a father. And my, you know, it's like, it's, I saw this struggle of, like, you know, violence and ignorance in my family, and that every generation has gotten a little bit further. And I'm like, oh, maybe I'm on the 10-yard line and my son will get the touchdown. And now I realize, fuck no. I'm like, there's subtle things I'm fucking up, and there's things that I can't, that, you know, and there's things that he's got genetically just like me that I can't control. And I was having this full-blown moment the first time I was watching Donnie Darko in the middle of this other fucking crazy film. Like, I was having this other internal drama.
I definitely was, too.
And I wonder if, like, because, like, I feel like as teenagers and 20-somethings, you're not thinking about that, but I wonder if there's any others. I would love to know if there's any other 40 or 50-somethings with preteens or teenagers that see this film, and that's all. They're like, oh, Jesus, like, I've got this interesting, cool person that I'm trying to raise, but what if I'm fucking them up?
Sure, but I think this movie is much more from the perspective of someone being in it, right? Like, of your son, or me as a teenager watching it as a 20-something trying to figure out life.
Yeah.
And trying to figure all this crazy, this mad world out.
Yeah.
And just, you know, that a lot of people come down, and I think, you know, Roberta Sparrow realizes, like, has some insight into it. She's another Donnie Darko, obviously. And it's driven her mad, right? Like,
yeah,
this knowledge of these tangent universes, and like, whether or not you believe she was a living receiver at some point, this knowledge has driven her insane. And I think that's what it would have done with Donnie Darko had he not killed himself or been killed.
Yeah.
Depending on how you view it. And this movie is smattered with different ways that people deal with the reality that we live in, right? Like, there's drugs. He starts off being medicated. You know, it's placebo, it turns out, but maybe it's not in the real universe. I don't know. Maybe it's not even a placebo. Maybe that's something she told him to get him closer to the living receiver's goal.
Do you think this film is aggressively anti mental health?
No,
I don't think it intends to be, but I think the side effect, just like Fight Club is unintentionally, like, almost fascist, I feel like that this film is almost unintentionally aggressive. Like, if I'm a teenager or a young person and I'm watching this, I see that essentially madness is glamorized, and the health this therapy stuff, this is like, I get it that she's part of the manipulated living,
right?
But as a surface level, she's just a terrible therapist.
I would say she comes closest to giving him any kind of real help.
Huh.
Because I don't think medication would have done it for him. I don't think the other forms of coping with our existence in the form of, like, God or suicide or straight up apathy, I don't think any of those things would have done it for him.
Huh.
Okay. I think all of those things are in there, and they're not there to say any one of these things is particularly wrong. It's just to show how people deal with the existential crisis of being a human.
Yeah.
In a universe that doesn't give a shit about you.
Right.
some people turn to God. And I think in the end, Donnie Darko turns to suicide.
Okay.
Which, you know.
Suicide by causality loop.
Right. But, you know, suicide in the primary universe, because he comes back and I think he just chooses to die there for all the reasons we stated before.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, his mom and dad fall into the apathy thing where, you know, they realize the universe is the way it is and that's how it's going to be. So, but they can't quite like enjoy it.
Uh-huh.
They're just there until it ends. Kind of zombies in their own sort of way.
Right.
We try to make it super easy to support making podcasts at Bald Move. Just join the club.
But some people aren't the joining type, or maybe they're already in the club but want to add a little bit of gratuity for an especially great season of coverage, or for a podcast that really spoke to them, or gave them that bit of support in a tough time.
For these, and for whatever other reason you might have, our tip jar is always open. Head over to support.baldmove.com and click the donate option to say, hey, keep doing what you're doing. We appreciate it.
Once again, check out support.baldmove.com for all the great ways to help me and Jim keep making the podcast you love. Commission podcasts are an awesome feature here at Bald Move that allows you, the individual listener, to decide what we talk about for a single podcast.
The community loves it because it often leads to fun, fan-favorite films and TV shows that we've overlooked getting the coverage they deserve.
And we love it because we're constantly exposed to great stuff that's not even on our radar.
The way it works is simple. You go to support.baldmove.com and you click on commissions. Then you pay the flat rate for the commission and tell us what two-ish hours of content you'd like us to make podcasts on.
Then we'll contact you for details, advanced feedback, and any dedications you'd like to make.
Then we watch the thing, discuss the thing, turn it into a podcast, and pump it right into your ears.
We get consistently great feedback on how much our commissioners love their podcast, and they make great gifts for the dedicated Bald Move fan in your life.
And who knows, that dedicated fan could even be you. Treat yourself. Check out support.baldmove.com for more info. Since the dawn of time, we've been putting clothes on our back that identify us with our people, our group, our tribe.
And while Bald Move might be one of the smallest, weirdest tribes out there, transcending all concepts of border, class, culture, and creed, we still have respect for the old ways.
At support.baldmove.com, you can get t-shirts, hats, mugs, and more. We have something for every one of our podcasts, or just wear the four pips of the Bald Move logo with pride.
Bald Move merch beats running around naked, and they make a great gift for the Bald Move fan in your life. Join our tribe! Head over to support.baldmove.com and click on merch to start shopping.
I don't know. It's an interesting movie. I've got some other stuff. There's a lot of stuff about choice and predestination, how your actions affect other people, and the consequences of those. And it's reflected in this fat girl. I don't know what to call fat people who feel bad about being fat without insulting them. She's clearly made out to be the fat girl at school.
Yeah, like I guess I don't have a problem as speaking as the weight challenged.
Is that what I'm supposed to say?
I don't find if like people like I guess the reason like fat
those more affected by gravity like
fat becomes a slur. Fat becomes a slur when there's malicious intent behind it. If it's just a descriptor, I don't think it's a problem.
Okay.
And, you know, I unless you're about to spew a bunch of hate against fat people, I think you'll be all right.
I'm not. I mean, Donnie.
As your fat friend, I say it's okay for you to call people fat.
Just promise me it'll be okay. You'll turn out all right.
Yeah.
But that's what he says to this fat girl, right? Like he's trying to influence this universe in a positive way, even though he doesn't really see it as meaningful. Like okay. He's trying to show this girl that she doesn't have to feel so bad about herself, and like his actions have consequences.
Uh huh.
In that regard.
What is this? So,
whereas his sister is like oblivious to that.
Yeah. But what did you make of the fact that she was wearing earmuffs? Did you see? I was wondering if there's any symbolism there.
I don't know.
About her being closed, like trying to protect herself from the universe.
Maybe. Maybe.
Whereas Donnie Darko is all about becoming open to the universe.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I this could be reading too much, but I don't know that you can be accused of reading too much into any part of this movie.
Yeah, I mean, thematically, there's a lot there, and plot-wise, there's a lot there. So I'm willing to explore all options here.
Yeah.
The other thing is, like, I wonder how much Donnie is, you know, a product of that that nature, or nurture versus nature, the nature of his existence, you know, like the circumstances he finds himself in. Because at one point he says that he went to jail for something, and he got held back in school. He can't drive until he's older than the rest of the kids, and so he feels like an outcast.
Yeah.
And in a lot of ways, I identified with that too, just being the weirdo at school, right?
Sure.
Because I had a very strange childhood by normal standards. And that's why I feel like later on when he tells this fat girl, tell me you're going to be okay. Promise me you're going to be okay. He's trying to tell her that this stuff doesn't matter that much, right?
Right.
Because in the bigger cosmic sense, none of it matters. So don't get too hung up on it.
Yeah.
But then, like, Donnie kills himself at the end, so I'm not sure what his exact point is, other than to maybe just spread a little bit of good cheer, a little bit of help before he goes.
Yeah.
To the people who are going to stick around.
Yeah, I don't know. That's the other part where, like, I don't see how the Chut Up Girl fits in exactly with the themes of the movie. Other than it's just, like, people aren't practicing open cruelty to Donnie Darko, because it seems like he could have beat these guys' asses if he had to.
Yeah.
Right?
Maybe.
He stands up. Like, he seems like he's not too worried, whereas, and he's not a good target for cruelty, where this one girl is a convenient target and outlet for that cruelty. So it's another way for him to experience the cruelty of the world in a way that he can't himself experience.
Okay.
You know, it's like, none of these guys can say anything to hurt me, but they can say things to hurt her. And I see that. And it's in yet another state of injustice. Cause there's this line in the movie. I don't know what the context was, but I wrote it down, something about, tolerating of casual cruelty.
Okay.
I don't know. Shit. I wish I'd put the character's name that said these, because my usual method of notes works, but where I just take stream of consciousness, like sentence dialogue, remind me. But there's so many characters in here, and this is such a crazy mind bender of a movie that is letting me down.
Yeah.
Something like garden variety cruelty is tolerated by necessity. And that's something that Donnie is incapable of doing, like the whole go along, get along.
Right. And there's a lot of, you know, fear, mixed up in that. He comments on fear and choice a lot.
Yeah. And that came about, like, cause this was a result of, like, someone comes up to Gretchen and says, like, didn't your dad, like, stab your mom? Mm-hmm. Like, such a huge escalation in the social. Like, that would never happen as an adult. Or if an adult did that in a work staying place, like, you have three or four people like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
What is wrong with you? Whereas in high school, a person can say that and not be challenged ever.
Sure. Sure.
That's.
Yeah.
I don't know what point I'm trying to make there, other than garden variety cruelty is tolerated. Because if you go and leap to the person's defense, your fear is that, then you're going to be the target of that. And I don't know why. Why is it that we just don't tolerate that in the adult world? Because you get fired, like in school, there are probably types of assholes that are that dramatic and they probably do go for the throat, but everyone decides, like, they're not going to be friends with them and they're not going to let them be employed. So by the time you're in your 30s, it's very rare to come across to that person, unless, I guess, like, that's why it's so annoying to go to, like, large public places like beaches and concerts, because, oh, fuck, now I got to deal with these assholes again. Whereas in school, there is no filter. Everyone has to fucking go, regardless of whether you are a social recluse or whether you're a sociopath. You all have to go to the school. So it's kind of like a prison environment where people don't. I bet prison's another place where people don't leap to others' defenses.
Right.
It's and you much band more together in tribal social. Like, school's fucking, I don't know why we do school the way we do. It's so weird.
I don't know how else you do it. I mean, these kids are trying to figure out how to coexist, right?
I don't know. Maybe you need more supervision because, like, one adult for every 30 kids just lets too much shit go in the shadows.
Or, I mean, maybe more social guidance. I mean,
you separate the kids by, but social aptitude, but then you got a class full of animals and a class full of scholars. What do you,
right?
I mean, it seems like it's like, well, it's a blend, get the ratio of 50-50. So it's tolerable for everybody. I don't know. But school, like public school, it seems like, well, I don't know how you do it better, but whew, there's sure a lot that, in my experience, and it seems like it hasn't much changed from my son's experience. Seems like there's a whole lot of room for improvement.
Yeah, I mean, from what I remember in my experience, there wasn't a whole lot of social guidance. It was more around just trying to teach these kids facts.
Maybe that's what it is. Like there's
a school counselor, but it's always kind of seen as weird to go to the school counselor.
Well, the other thing is you can't teach social conscience because that's, you're going to have parents that are offended.
Sure. Yeah.
Like, what are you, it's like, even if it's something like,
And that's the thing that, the English teacher is trying to teach in this.
Right.
In this.
And she gets blown up for it.
Right. And she gets fired for it. Mm-hmm. She's trying to actually give these kids a real world education. What did you think about these books? What do they make you feel?
Right.
Whereas everybody else is just trying to shove facts down your throat, but conspicuously.
Right. And you can't.
The health and personal growth, right? Like,
right.
She has relabeled health class as health and personal growth in
my
head.
And she's also filling your head full of nonsense.
Right.
And bullshit and psychobabble and bullshit.
And she's not concerned with what you think about it. She's wanting to just preach to you.
Right. Which I think that would have gotten her in trouble too. But that's the thing. In school, you can't teach religion and you can't really teach morality.
Mm hmm.
So what you end up having is like this really Darwinistic society.
Yeah, it's
Lord of the Flies.
It's a content dump.
Hmm.
But yeah, I don't know. It's interesting, like this idea of predestination and choice, which is a big thing in this movie that we haven't really talked about. And it's, it's approached from a very, like, I'll say this as a 30 plus year old person, a very rudimentary philosophy 101 standpoint, right? Like, do I have free will? It's the most basic question that anybody asks in philosophy.
Uh-huh.
And it's one that I don't think we have a good answer to. And the movie doesn't really try to say one way or another.
Right.
But I think Donnie Darko does, in fact, have a choice and he exercises it. And maybe in this one moment, it's almost kind of a universe out of time in that respect, where like he sees God's path, for lack of a better term, that's what he calls it, in the form of these abyss graphics for everyone else. And then he sees his own and he's able to at some point step out of it and say, I'm making a conscious choice. I think him at the end,
but that's the first time in the whole film.
Right. It's the only opportunity he will ever have in this tangent universe when he is the living receiver and he can make a conscious choice to do a thing.
Yeah, once he delivers the artifact to the rift, he is a free moral agent and he chooses to die.
And he's gotten a true glimpse into the future with this jet engine falling on his house, right? He knows this is going to happen. Then he has a choice of whether or not to let it kill him.
Why do we assume...
And he chooses to let it kill
him. Why do we assume, like, isn't it another perfectly valid assumption that Donnie Darko has no memory of the tangent universe at the point that he dies?
I don't think so. I mean, the way he reacts
is that
to
he
it.
Laughs.
Yes. Yeah.
But he also is a schizophrenic.
Right.
So he could have just been
He may or may not be a schizophrenic. Like, he's existing in a tangent universe. That much, I think,
the fact
is factual.
He's under he's under medical supervision. That happens before the tangent universe, right?
Oh, yeah. He's already in it. And
but,
I think
but
it's his
on
parents'
end, it
way.
Seems like it just started because I feel like that the therapist had seen him for a few sessions and she brings him in and says, I think this is what's going on with your son. Although, on the other hand, it could be that she'd been seeing him for months and then since the tangent universe started, his symptoms have upticked and he's gotten much worse.
Yeah. I mean, we're introduced to the therapist in a way that says, this has been going on for some amount of time, whether it's a long time or a short time, it doesn't matter. In the primary universe, he is in therapy.
Okay.
And I think that's his parents trying to help him cope with his problems with life,
yeah.
his problems with existence. You know, like he's had a troubled life. He got sent to jail early on for something, and it's irrevocably changed him and his interactions with other people.
Yeah.
And he feels different because of that. And they're trying to help him through therapy, but now he's in a tangent universe right. and all that is kind of out the window.
Yeah. And I thought that was an interesting performance by their parents, the way they played that, finding out about that, your something like that with your son because, or your child, because it's a weird, it's like, you know, you want the best for your child. And if you find out that they've got some kind of disease, that's going to limit their quality of life. Or, you know, some kind of mental illness that's going to make life, like if you find out your yeah. kid's bipolar, it's like, that's got to be really kind of crushing. Like, you don't love them any less, but it's like, God, your life just got harder.
Right.
You're going to have to take medicine. You're going to have to do this. And you have to be eternally vigilant against your own mind to keep on an even keel, something that most people take for granted. It's and that's another thing is about mental illness is that, you know, you see a kid in a wheelchair. Or you see an adult in a wheelchair, it's like you kind of know, it's like, okay, well, this person's got these limitations. And whereas, you know, a person could be really struggling with life, but they look entirely healthy and normal, which is one of the mind fucks about the mental illness.
Sure.
Like it's not a yeah. visible affliction, yet it's also real. I don't.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like I said, I kept on having swinging between the sci-fi and philosophy and just like the kind of like heavy elements of life that the movie was serving up. I feel like we've trained our whole podcasting lives to do this movie.
Okay.
You want to talk about philosophies of the mind.
Right.
You want to talk about time travel. You want to talk psychology and religion. Fucking bring it, because this movie's
trouble
doing
is,
it all.
Like, so seeing it as a 20 something, it was very satisfying because I was struggling with the same issues that Donnie was.
Sure.
Seeing it as a 30 something, I'm going like, well, Don, there's no answers.
Uh-huh.
You're not going to get the answers you're looking for. And there's no answer as to whether or not there may in fact be an answer to this, but we don't know what the answer is yet. But is your path predetermined? Can you get off the path? Is there any way to combat predestination? We don't know. We don't know if it's a thing or not, but go with it, because that's all there is in existence.
And that's what adds the spice to me, because I'm in a situation where I'm starting to have these conversations with my son.
Right.
And I'm like, I can't really, like, the full truth is horrifying in a cosmic, like, Lovecraftian sense.
It's very, it can also be depressing, sure.
Yeah, but it's also, like, you know, it's also something they kind of have to figure out themselves. It's like very The Matrix-like. Like, you can't be told
yeah.
the truth about the universe. Because I feel if people try to cram it down your throat, you know, it's just as likely to blow up in your face, and they're going to reject it because, you know, your old man's got to be stupid, right?
Uh-huh.
So I don't know. It's like, that's the thing. Like, I guess it added that extra element to me, because now it's like, it's one thing to say like, hey, well, what do you tell Donnie Darko as a 30 something or a 40 something? But when it's your kid, like, what do you tell your kid about the nature of life and the meaning of the universe and the cosmic realities if they ask you?
I don't know.
That's right. Right. So
I don't even know what to tell myself about it.
I know. It's everyone's got to figure out themselves.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
There's a little bit more about this. The speech that he gives at the end, or the little monologue, the narration says, I hope that when the world comes to an end, I can breathe a sigh of relief because there will be so much to look forward to. I think this is him saying, I hope that I can accomplish my mission as a living receiver and set right this tangent universe. But I think it's also him saying, beyond this, I want to see what's beyond life. And that's one of the reasons I think he chooses to kill himself here, or chooses to let himself die, rather. He's saying that there's much to look forward to beyond the end of the world. And for him, I think the end of the world is both the tangent universe and his existence.
Uh-huh.
And I think he's yeah. searching for some greater meaning beyond it all.
Hmm.
Which, you know, is a fairly fitting way to end this movie. I think we all kind of are searching for the meaning of life. It's just Donnie chooses a certain path of discovery, let's right. say.
And there you go with your free will argument.
Yeah.
If you say he's manipulated up to that point and he's seen all this crazy fucked up stuff, like, that's information that's been introduced by the universe into evidence that wasn't there before. So mm-hmm. even in the end, did he really have a, was that a, was that a decision that Donnie Darko 30 days ago would have made? And if not, then he still doesn't have free will, does he?
It's a fair question. I mean, that's one of the major themes of this movie. And I feel like with the idea of time travel and tangent universes and all this stuff, they're trying to say to me that Donnie Darko is an anomaly in the universe and that he can, in fact, make this one choice.
Do you think there's anything symbolic in the fact that after he survived this incredible, the fact that the airplane engine almost killed him in the tangent universe, that he immediately started, like, I noticed that every scene that after that, he wasn't wearing a seatbelt. And he also immediately started smoking. Is that foreshadowing the fact that he is going to choose suicide? Like, he's essentially trying to chase death from that point. And as soon as his mission's accomplished, he's like, all right. Doesn't line up with the fact that he was laughing when he died, but...
I didn't really notice that, so I don't have any analysis on
okay.
it. Sorry.
I was like, literally the next scene, his dad's taking him to school, he's not wearing a seatbelt, when he's at the crosswalk waiting for the school bus or whatever, a kid offers him cigarettes, and that's clearly like the first time he smoked.
Okay.
I got that impression. I don't know.
Right.
Can I ask you, here's the thing that I kept wondering as I was reading about this movie and thinking about it. How in the fuck did Richard Kelly come up with this? Like, did it start with a nightmare about this rabbit face? And like, because this is just so out there and so not like, it's a solid sci-fi concept, but it's got his own mythos and religion. And
it does. Yeah.
Like,
that's why I call it
fantasy.
And
he was so fucking young.
Yeah.
He banged this out, which means he had to come up with it years before. Who rolls out of like college? Like, let's say,
I think Donnie Darko does.
That's
I think he is Donnie Darko.
Do you
in a
think?
Lot of ways.
I wonder how autobiographical this was. Then
I think it's probably pretty on point with the way he feels. You know, I don't think Richard Kelly lives in a tangent universe at any point, but
no, but like that
the
was
feelings
kinda...
that he has. I think are embedded in this movie.
Do you think
pretty
this
thoroughly.
Is a story he told himself as a teenager to make life make sense? And then, like, I think there's a Nolan and Inception and Memento and all that stuff, but Memento is kind of based on like, oh, what if a guy had to solve a murder, and like the pitch is a lot easier. It's a one sentence.
Right.
What if a guy had to solve a murder and he has complete short-term amnesia?
Yeah.
Donnie Darko is, how do you give the elevator pitch?
I don't think it's actually that hard.
Okay. Give it to me. What's the one sentence?
There's a kid who's pulled into a rift in time, and he is the chosen one who has to set the rift right in order to save the primary universe.
Like, all right.
It's a pretty short pitch if you want to stick only to the plot.
Okay.
Now create the mythos around it. There's a book, Philosophy of Time Travel, and a woman, Roberta Sparrow, who wrote it, and she's gone insane, and like
there's this chain of causality that's going to cause you to murder someone, it's going to go back in time, and with
and
this
Donnie can see these
and
things, and like, yeah, it's so once you expand it beyond the elevator pitch, it becomes a much more interesting thing.
Yeah.
I can't speak for Richard Kelly, but if I were looking at it, I would say, okay, here's something that maybe reflects the world we're living in, mm-hmm. and a single character, actually, multiple characters, Roberta Sparrow, this knight from the past, whatever, and Donnie Darko, who are able to make these once in a lifetime choices.
Huh. Okay.
On the path that can save. It's tough to say.
Yeah, it really is.
As far as like, is this maybe a psychotic vision and not, in fact, time travel or parallel universes? I think there are a couple things that lend themselves to this not being true. First of all, Gretchen waving to Donnie Darko's mother in the end, to me says that she has knowledge of, or at least feels some weird kind of connection to Donnie and his family.
I don't think anyone has any knowledge, but they have some kind of like, Louis C.K.'s got this skit about, you know, how you could be completely cruel in like a casual sense to a baby.
Mm-hmm.
Like not neglect them, but say hateful things to them all the time. And he's like, you know, and they would never know. And it's like, right. Yeah, they grow up with this sadness inside, but they wouldn't know why. And it's like, I feel like that is like, they've had these profound, the emotional impact is there, but they don't know why. And I don't know, but you also can explain that as this Gretchen, like, seeing this woman who's extremely sad, and, you know, they've heard in a neighborhood that the plane hit him, and she's just kind of like, it's an empathy wave.
But I think after watching this movie,
I'm not going to argue.
You have license to read into it.
That's the thing. Like, I don't want to fall in the trap of totally agreeing with your analysis and leaving something out, because yes, that's what I thought too.
Right.
I think that's the whole point of the goddamn, what's the song called? Mad World. I think that's the whole song. The point of the Mad World montage is these people all coming to grips with the things that happen. Like, the fact that Patrick Swayze is sobbing, is he sobbing because he's a child molester, or is he sobbing because he's got this, like, this dread and fear inside of him about the lifestyle, because he, in the alternate timeline, the shadow of his experience where his house burnt down and he got brought up on charges is still on him.
Yeah, I think he's feeling a little bit of residual. Or is that something
pedophiles do, just randomly break down and cry? Because I believe that too. That's
right. I mean, we have talked in the past about the unfortunate position you're put in if you live a life where you are attracted to children.
Yeah, sure.
Right. It's a tragedy in its own right.
If that's a sexual, and it's granted, it's if I don't
sure.
I don't, but it seems to me that this is some kind of sexual orientation.
But, and whether it's nature or nurture, I don't know.
It doesn't matter.
And it doesn't ultimately matter,
But it's just like, you know, a lot of things you could say about, and this, Jesus, is going to be super offensive, but a lot of things that you could say about, or that people said about gay people in the past, see if I can make sure it's not offensive. You know, it's like, or a lot of the arguments you could say about the reason, like, you know, gay people are always saying, like, this isn't a choice, this is my nature, is because, like, it was so bad to be a gay person as far as how people treated you and the social stigma.
Yeah.
Why the fuck would you ever just choose to be attracted to a man if you're a man? And I feel like the same thing with pedophiles, only supercharged. Like, if you could choose a different sexual orientation, this is something you've cultivated, why the fuck would you do that? So if it is a nature thing, it's the one sexual orientation where it's not, and I'm not trying to move over into the window. I'm saying it's impossible for you to ever consummate because you're attracted to children, which cannot give consent and are not sexual or not emotionally, psychologically or physically prepared for sex.
Right. And then
so
the tragedy of is it
pitiable it people
is like Mick Jagger, you can't get no satisfaction. I mean,
sure.
If that's what does it for you and society tells you that's completely wrong.
Yeah.
Sorry. You're just never going to be satisfied unless you want to abuse children.
Yeah.
Unless you're okay. Like saying my satisfaction is worth child abuse.
Yeah.
Which, you know, we don't agree as a society.
Sure.
But you can look at it like, let's not, if you want to take it out of the context of like sexuality, you can look at someone like a Steve Jobs or a Bill Gates, these extremely driven people, right?
Sure.
Are they products of their nature and their nurture? I would say yes, just as much as a child molester is, you know? It's just that one is frowned upon by society, the other is
well,
not.
Well, even that, like Steve
they
Jobs.
They were fortunate enough to be born with things that are advantageous in this society.
But not fully, because, you know, Steve Jobs is lionized and everybody loves him, but by all accounts, he was a terrible father.
Sure, and a huge asshole, and like there were people who certainly hated him.
But we overlooked that because they have these things that we do like to lionize.
And it certainly helped him in his business endeavors, right?
Sure.
Like he was a genius by all accounts in that regard, and same with Bill Gates. So like those are just different aspects of being a human that they happen to be endowed with, whereas child molesters get the opposite end of the spectrum societally.
It's just a single bad card with no upside.
Right. So like I don't know. It's tough, but What are the other, like, I think maybe Frank's drawings indicate that it's not actually just a vision that Donnie Darko is seeing, because if it were just a vision, how would he know about Frank? How would he know about the bunny? How, why would
those,
he be seeing
those
these things that this guy drew?
And then the POV is crucial, because if we saw those things from Donnie Darko's POV, then, this seems like an omniscient POV where we're just seeing real events happening.
I mean, we can't see it from Donnie Darko's POV. He's dead at that point, right? We can't go out into his front yard and see that from his POV unless it's some kind of
is he dead? Because I thought the Mad World montage is when he puts the the artifact back, and so he sets the tangent universe, but the end of the Mad World montage, doesn't he laugh in his bed and get smashed? Or is he get smashed?
No, I think he gets smashed and then the montage happens.
God,
because his mother,
I think, like, watching this twice would be enough.
Because it's most of it is like the paramedics milling about outside and like fire people. That's what they're called.
Fire people.
And his mom leaning up against a tree, smoking, being sad about his death. Like,
gotcha.
It's afterward. So, like, it couldn't be his perspective unless it's an after death perspective. And we're seeing a cosmic Donnie Darko floating about.
Yeah.
Which maybe we are. I don't know.
Yeah. The fact that she's leaning up against a tree and smoking, you talk about her mental state. Their marriage reminds me a lot of like the one on, goddamn it, Rick and Morty.
Okay.
What was it? Jerry and.
Sure. Yeah.
Because like there's this one point in the movie where she tells him, I want a divorce.
Mm-hmm.
And there's like this beat. And then they both just crack up hysterical laughing, which I thought that felt like a pretty genuine moment.
All right.
You know, I can see, sure. I mean, I don't think I've ever been in that situation, but I feel like that's something I could relate to.
Okay. Like, you know, it's not going to happen. And what's the point anyway?
Well, so. Plus they just did such a good job of like painting these portraits in such a small amount of screen time that by the time we got that, like I felt like, yes, that's exactly the reaction these people would have.
Yeah.
So, but I don't know exactly why. Like, why was that funny? The fact that you would want to divorce, you're this late in life and you got these in like, you right. want a divorce in the middle.
You're so deep in it. And like,
yeah, it's like, are you going to really,
what's out there for you? If you like, do get a divorce, like, will it change anything?
You could do the same thing by saying, announcing that I don't love you anymore.
Right.
And then it's like, okay,
what does that matter?
Or like, also it's like, that's something I've known like for years, but we know we're both not going to do it. It's
right.
It's the unami of emotion. It was very hard to describe, but I know I could detect it.
It's a mouthfeel, a brain feel.
It truly is.
Okay. I don't know that I have much more to say about this. There are certainly more themes to explore, and I'm sure if the forums would be a great place to do that.
Yeah. I mean, hopefully there's like the one question discussion. That we haven't quite covered is like, where does the jet engine originate from? But it's another one of those things where that's the big bang of this universe. You're not going to, I don't think there's enough information in the film nor the supporting material.
Why does the rift happen? Who knows?
Right. What causes it?
Yeah.
But like, you know, why, how does the jet engine actually manifest? And why does that stuff? I don't know what creates the tangent universe. What is there an intelligent force in the movies? Like that stuff that can be debated, but I don't think there's enough information to answer.
And ultimately, like the sci-fi of this movie is not what I was interested in initially. And it's not what I'm interested in now. It's more the philosophy of it.
Yeah. Cause it's,
how do people deal with reality
yeah.
and existence?
It has a lot in common with The Leftovers that way.
Yeah.
The, like the plot.
Where there it's grief. It's focused on grief.
They
here
don't bother.
It's focused on
yeah.
pointlessness, like, on there's futility.
There's a lot less even than this movie, mechanical explanation for what's going on in Leftovers. It's like way more. But the same
yeah.
thing where it's like, when the first, after I watched this movie the first time, I thought, oh, the real hook here is the mechanics and the sci-fi element. But I think you're right. Going forward, watching this again, the real hook is going to be the emotional themes.
Yeah, and I guess maybe the reason I attribute this to like kind of low level philosophy, like introductory philosophy, is
yeah.
because I saw it so long ago and
yeah.
it seeped into what I view, like my understanding of philosophy.
Yeah. Yeah,
in a way that now I've kind of moved past.
Okay.
And view it as rudimentary, whereas a lot of people would just have their minds blown, and I did too when I first saw it.
Huh.
So I'm not like trying to disparage if you think this movie is amazing, and it certainly is. Like, I'm not trying to disparage you when I say it's rudimentary and it's like fundamental basic philosophy.
Everyone has a movie that blows their mind.
Yeah.
Hard. And it, you'll as you get older, that'll happen less and less frequently. And
yes.
you'll probably eventually have one that's like the all time mind blower, mind bender. And if that's like, man, if Donnie Darko was yours, it's pretty good.
Yeah, it was like
pretty good one to blow your mind.
I had seen The Matrix, right? And it's like, God, you know, The Matrix and Donnie Darko influenced me a lot.
That's what I feel like. I feel like there's, you know, like Memento's up there for me. The Matrix is up there for me. Dark City. another one.
I remember hating Dark City, but I don't remember what it was about
at all.
Dark
City is really fucking deep, and it's a city that's dark. It's also
I think I saw that maybe too young. I don't remember what it was about though.
Yeah. But yeah, there's definitely a Cosmos, I think. Of course, I was too close-minded to really have my mind blown that movie in the beginning. But no, do we have anything else we want to say?
No, I'm good.
Well, thank you again for lobbing us a softball, Dr. DeVito. I hope you weren't too put off by our apology for child molester. It wasn't an apology.
I didn't apologize for it.
It's trying to understand.
Right.
Achieve an understanding and
have some kind of sympathy.
Yeah. And what I don't know that anything good comes of it, but what the fuck? You pays your money, it takes your chances.
Is it empathy or sympathy? One is where you feel for them because you're in the same situation.
I think pity is a sympathy. And I don't feel like I understand and like what it's like to be.
No.
But it's more like I pity them. So I guess I'm sympathizing. But that would be a rough situation to not be able to healthily express your sexuality and your love. Anyway, thank you once again, Dr. DeVito, for commissioning this podcast. We will be back pretty soon with another one. If you would like to find out how to commission, my mind's completely been wrung by this movie. If you'd like to commission, if you'd like to do anything involving commissioning and films and Bald Move, go to baldmove.com/shop, click on the big cinema wheel, and there is a cornucopia of options. You can either pay $10 for a share of a commission with your fellow fans. We got a bunch of different fan voted selections, or you can just pull one down yourself. And make us watch whatever.
And if you want to find out what's upcoming, go to baldmove.com/commissioned-podcast. And we've got the whole list of them, the queue.
I need to go back through the catalog and add that as a link so people can track and see what else
I
need to go in both directions. There's like people sometimes ask what all of you commissioned.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, go, I need to make that a link to have all those tags. And then also looking at, we should probably collect that all in the one place.
Probably. The next one, which is another noodle buster, I guess, is Magnolia.
Right. Another one I haven't seen.
Yeah.
We got Lost coming up, too.
We do.
Curious to see how that's going to work.
Yeah. It's going to be an interesting run.
We got Magnolia, then
Magnum P.I., which is going to be
Magnum P.I.
less of a noodle buster.
It's the Mag month. The month of Mag. Magnolia. Yeah, right. Magnum P.I.
Then it's Lost. Then Seven. Then, I mean, just go look at the list.
Holy shit. Seven.
Yeah. We have a real murderer's row of stuff coming up.
Literally.
So
Kevin Spacey murdering people. That's seven. At least seven people.
Yep.
All right. Well, we will see you again. Have a good weekend, week, whenever this drops. Bye.